Today's episode of The Wretched Hive is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/hive. That's H-I-V-E. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to the Wretched Hive Podcast.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Moss Eisley Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's good news.
I like the sound of that.
Well, guys, we made it to Rogue One Part 2. So much to talk about with Rogue One. One episode was not enough. We got to take two to cover everything we wanted to cover in Rogue One. And you have found the Wretched Hive Podcast for Friday, January 6th, 2017. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Hope you guys had a great one. Actually, we're, truth be told, we are recording this before the New Year. But you know what? We just have to throw it up there because we're traveling. We got holidays. We don't want to miss an episode. We don't want our fans to miss an episode. Every 2 weeks, we are committed to the process. And so we are recording Rogue One Episode 2. And we're ready to go. We're fired up. And we have most of the Hive with us tonight. We've got Nico Rodriguez, the captain of the Millennial Falcon, is a little bit under the weather, so he will not be joining us. But
Nico Rodriguez.
Won't
be with us tonight.
You know, that's the price I pay for oatmeal stout while we record the show. I sometimes woe my R's. But lucky for us, we do have the man from, well, is it North San Diego County or South LA? I don't know where you live. You're way down there. Greg Lent.
I'm deep in the bowels of Orange County is where I am. Deep, deep, deep undercover in the bowels of Orange County. So we really wanted to get the recording of Rogue One. We had too much show for only one episode. It was a special supersized episode for a movie that's only 2 hours long. We're going to talk for days and days and days about it, and we're going to do a lot of talking about it over the next coming year. So here we are with part two. Yesterday, unfortunately, we lost Carrie Fisher. You guys jumped on immediately, got on, and he got a very special episode. And said a lot of things that we all were feeling at the time. And today, tragically, we also have lost the mother of Princess Leia, Debbie Reynolds. The great theatrical legend, Debbie Reynolds. And we're all super bummed about that. And I just want to give, since I was not on the show last night, I want to give my condolences to Billie Lord, Carrie Fisher's daughter. And just can't imagine what she must be going through. But hopefully we can all rally around her and give her some good feelings and send her some positive vibes.
Well said, Greg. And all of us here at the Wretched Hive would like to once again express our condolences to the family of Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds. Their loss is tremendous, no doubt. And but as they say in Hollywood, the show must go on.
We will persevere, sir.
They would want us to continue talking about what we're passionate about, and they certainly brought a lot of passion to their work, and we do to ours as well. So thank you for acknowledging that, Greg, and absolutely right. We got to purge forth, got to continue, and thank you for acknowledging that very, very much. Also on the show, we have lifelong Star Wars fan Scotty Vansky.
Thanks, Steve. Greg, nice to have you on there and jump in. And I know we weren't able to connect last night, but glad you were there. If anything does go wrong, my resolution tonight is I will not blame Skype I am going to blame 2016 for any problems that happened tonight. And other than that, I'm excited. We have a new Star Wars film coming up in less than a year or so.
All of the legends that have left us in this incredibly shitty, messed up 2016, and Chewbacca Mom was not one of them.
Don't make me bust out the mask.
I hope you bust out the mask sometime after that comment. You need to show Greg who's boss. And finally, we have Dave! Under no circumstances
should you ever
ever call him Harry Potter.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. I gotta say, we're probably taking a huge, huge chance by recording this with time still left in 2016. So if anybody dies between now and this podcast being heard, we're sorry we're not able to acknowledge it. I just want to be upfront about that. But I will be happy that this dumpster fire every year is just in the rearview mirror in a couple of days.
Yes. For God's sake, Harrison Ford, just stay home.
Oh, yeah, Harrison Ford, do not get in a plane. No matter what anybody says, do not do it.
Please do not go down this road, you guys. This whole show could become about this, and this is not good. We should not be joking about this.
Well, Greg earlier, I thought he hit it right on. You know, the Oscars are going to need to do a whole separate frickin' show for the In Memoriam segment this year. I mean, it's just been a bitch stick slap up of the celebrity circle this year.
It's been rough. It's been rough.
You know, it was one of our early shows, I think maybe episode 2 or 3, we paid homage to Alan Rickman. Somebody mentioned that on our little pre-show chatter.
Well, since we sort of started, don't call me Harry Potter. I think the Rickman reference came up, but also we lost Kenny Baker this year. So
Kenny Baker was earlier this year. Yeah,
it hasn't been a good year for Star Wars fans in the sense of losing technically two of the main cast. So,
and Sideburns McGee, who got force choked by Vader, he died this year too.
Awesome.
And Admiral Ackbar, I think, died this year as well.
Admiral Ackbar. Oh, man, it's been a hell of a year for the Star Wars universe.
Oh, my God.
All these people. And then you had Jyn Erso, dead. Cassian Andor, dead. K2SO.
Wait. Greg. Those are characters. Those are characters.
Oh.
Right,
oh.
Right.
Also, spoiler alert.
spoiler alert. No.
That's a great point. Thank you, Dave. And if you'd like additional spoiler alerts, do not go to our Facebook page because we never put spoiler alerts up there, but you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/WretchedHivePodcast. You can also leave us a voicemail, 562-455-4483. That's 562-455-HIVE. And talking about spoiler alerts, we should acknowledge right up front, there are going to be many spoilers for Rogue One in this podcast.
Yes, so to quote Kylo Ren from the Kylo Ren review of Rogue One, if you don't already know that the entire cast dies at the end of the movie, you need to leave right now. Just leave right now.
Damn it, Dave! I haven't seen it! Oh, wait, no, I have.
Actually, do your time turner thing. Go back 10 seconds before Dave said that and leave. Because everybody dies.
I have not watched that Kylo Ren reviews, and I've loved the Kylo Ren reviews, the Rogue One trailer, and so I need to go and see the Kylo. I saw that it was posted on the internet a few days ago, and I still have not watched it yet. I've just been, it's been a crazy couple days, guys. Yeah, crazy couple.
It has been.
It's a 10 minutes you won't regret spending.
Excellent.
All right. Which is what I said to my prom date, but that's another story.
Hell, if you made it 10 minutes during prom, I'm impressed.
I'm giving you high fives for that one.
That's what she said.
Well, guys, we've got a little bit to cover tonight, so let's just jump right into it with Rogue One Recon.
For over 1,000 generations, the Jedi Knights were the guardians of peace and justice in the Old Republic.
It's grounded, like a lot of subject views of what it's like to be really in a war in the Star Wars universe.
Attacking that battle station ain't my idea of courage. It's more like suicide. fighters unite for a daring mission to steal the Death Star plans and bring new hope to the galaxy.
Rogue One Reconnaissance.
Rogue One Reconnaissance.
It's kind of weird being on this side of it, you know? It was kind of fun, all the build-up. We've been talking about this movie for the better part of a year.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's a little sad for me. You know, now that we know all the answers, we know what happens in the movie, it's kind of the prognostication part is always fun, you know?
I haven't gotten to that point yet, Steve, but I am going back soon to see it again, probably tomorrow sometime. So I'm pretty excited about it. I tried to do it earlier. But I want to point out that little clip that you play in that moment there, it really makes me reevaluate these movies, especially A New Hope. This movie has drastically changed A New Hope for me, and I love that. I love that it's bringing a new perspective to what I've been so familiar with over the years. But just what Han Solo says right there. There's so many great moments and so many tie-ins now to this this film with A New Hope and certainly other aspects of the trilogy and the prequel trilogy. But he...
Nice.
I forgot about that quote. What part of the trilogy was that? The trash compactor? Now, where was I going with that? Oh, so Han Solo says, attacking that battle station, it's like suicide. Yeah. Wow, that is just exactly what that movie is. What Rogue One is, just a suicide mission, and shockingly done in the best possible way. I just had such a great time with that movie. And I'm so excited to see it again. I haven't gotten to the point where I'm not over it, and even though I've kind of analyzed this thing to death, I'm excited to see it again, so I'm not quite at that point where it's kind of on the back burner and I'm looking forward to episode 8 yet. I'm still excited for Rogue One. So
yeah. I'll be first in line to buy the movie. Of course, I want to see all the extra footage. I want to see the I'll be excited for Gareth Edwards' commentary, and I'm assuming they did some good work in the behind the scenes with the way they make modern movies now, so it'll be interesting to see all of that. I want to see the original ending. Of course, we talked about how Gareth's ending was quite a bit different than what he was able to get greenlit from Disney. So it'll be great to see all that, and you know, I've seen it twice in the theaters, and I'll probably go see it again. So
I'm going to give a quick shout out to our Disney friends out there, because I have it on good authority that, you know, Kathleen Kennedy and a few of the other peeps from Disney all listen to our podcast. Can I just say one thing? Please do not double dip on this one. I'm so happy you did the two versions of Force Awakens. Just give us the whole package one time. I really just put all the deleted scenes, all the stuff that didn't make sense that you had to reshoot. I want to see all of it in one giant package.
You know who you're talking to, right? You realize the company that you are addressing when you make that statement?
You're asking them to make less money.
Giant. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
No, just you're asking them to make less money is what you're asking.
Are you kidding me? You add an extra $10 on it. They're millions of dollars.
I am pretty much committed at this point to not buy the first edition that comes out and only buy the second.
Yeah, that's a smart thing to do.
Because all you schmoes are going to buy the first copy, and I'll buy the second, and I'll let you borrow mine.
Well, there's probably going to be a lot. If the rumors are true, there will be a lot of Star Wars merchandise to buy next year, because the rumor is that there's going to be a 4K Ultra Blu-ray re-release of the original trilogy next year.
Damn, you know what? With all the Rogue One that we're talking about, that we're going to be talking about, and all the extra stuff, we can do another 4-hour show, guys. Let's do this.
All right, we got to get into this. We've got about 35 minutes. Some of us have to work tomorrow, so let's jump in here. I know you slackers, you know.
Whatever. I'm working tomorrow. What are you talking about?
All right.
Vacation! Woo!
All right, let's get right into this. Let's talk about Saw Gerrera. We did not get to talk about this character in part one at all. And definitely want to cover Saw and some other connections we have to the show Star Wars Rebels. I know, Scott, you want to touch on that. But
yes.
Let's talk about Saw first. So the first time we see Saw Gerrera, he's looking down at Jyn in her little rock cave. Little girl Jyn.
A younger Saw.
The younger Saw, right. You know, Saw is this character, he's got robotic legs, right? He uses this oxygen mask.
Who does that sound like?
He has robotic legs.
Freeze through a mask.
Is he the Bizarro World version of Vader? Is he the light side Vader in this movie? What'd you guys make of that?
Well, he's not a Force user, but I thought it was an interesting dynamic. I don't know that I've heard that they purposefully went in that direction, or if it was just a pleasant little happenstance or coincidence or whatever you want to call it. But I think it works. I think that there are people who have paid the price on both sides of the war, and you know, they obviously have the technology, so they use it for both ends. So sure.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting choice with the character. I mean, even looking at him, he's just a large, menacing figure. He's sort of mysterious. I mean, I think there's a lot of parallels you could draw with Vader and Saw Gerrera. Dave, did you get a sense of why Saw Gerrera was in this film? I mean, I really... You know, he's sort of a transitional character. He only lives about a third of the movie. What did you think of that? Did you have any thoughts on that? And what do you think about Saw's role in this film?
My honest thought is that they're setting up things that are going to happen later somewhere else, whether it's Rebels or a novel. If I'm remembering correctly. And I don't have the movie, so I don't have a transcript of the dialogue or anything. But when Mon Mothma is talking about Saw, she talks about him as someone that the Rebel Alliance can't associate with because he's too far to the extreme, kind of implying that he was part of it at the beginning, but then kind of broke off as a splinter group, and they're trying to bring him back in this purpose. So it almost sounds like they're introducing him here and killing him off to set up a storyline around his whole backstory, you know, maybe in season 4 of Rebels or something like that. And that is complete speculation on my part.
Actually, I think you're right on. Haven't they announced that Saw is going to be in the next season of Rebels?
Yeah, he's actually coming on the back half of season 3. So they're in the middle of the season. They've broken for the holiday, and when they come back, they'll have Saw Gerrera in the second half of the season.
And that I did know, but I'm speculating that there's going to be something more to come even beyond that, cuz I don't think the prominence of the appearance in the movie is worth setting up, you know, a 2-episode bit on Rebels, with all due respect to Rebels.
Yeah, and Dave, I got 2 points to add on top of that. Dave points out a great thing here. Yeah, the whole thing with Saw and he's like an extreme version, like an extreme left version of this Rebel Alliance. And I like that this movie points out the moral
ambiguity.
Thank you. Jameson's, you're talking to me tonight, buddy. Okay. Yeah, so I like that. I like that there's a difference, and it's not just the good guys and the bad guys. There is a difference in the way that things are delivered. We touched on this on the last episode where, oh my goodness, I'm forgetting their names already.
Cassian
shoots the guy in the back and is obviously being hired by the Rebels, or is part of the Rebels as almost like a hired gun, a hired assassin. There's a lot of moral gray area that's being worked in here, and I love that. I love that it's not just, we're the good guys, and look at us. Yay, we're going to stop these bad Empire guys. There's a lot more going on there, and Saw kind of represents that. He takes it almost to an extreme terrorist point of view. Like, he's ready to go out there and take down, kill, blow up stormtroopers, tanks. I think that's pretty interesting.
You know, that's a great point about the moral ambiguity of some of this stuff and of war. You know, it brings to mind, you know, war movies like Born on the 4th of July. I think there's a scene, the Tom Cruise movie, when, it's unclear whether or not one of the friendlies is shot, and he's got a moral dilemma about that he has to live with. Of course, in Platoon, there's the scene with the commander and the subservient, and they're in the jungle alone together. They don't get along, and one shoots the other. You know, that's sort of the nature of these war movies, where it makes brings some depth to the characters when they've got to struggle with these morally ambiguous problems. And I think that Cassian Andor is, and what he does in the beginning of the film is a great analogy to those.
Yeah, I think Cassian and I think the Saw character both represent that, and I love how that plays out in this film. But I want to touch on something else that you brought up about the idea that Saw is a kind of a light version of the Vader. I don't even think that it's a light version of Vader, because we've already seen in the prequel trilogy that the General Grievous character is much like the Vader character, where he's mostly a machine with some human parts still left in him. And I like that the Star Wars trilogy has a lot of callbacks to what Vader will eventually become, half man, half machine type thing. So, and Saw kind of represents the more man side versus the machine side, and I like that it kind of flip-flop from Episode 3 to Rogue One. You see how that's kind of leading to the Vader character, which already exists at this point, and does in Episode 3.
Now, we get introduced to a new creature in this movie. Saw refers to it as the Poor Gullet. Or something close to that. It's the truth monster that he wraps himself. This monster wraps itself around Bodhi Rook, and he's forced to tell the truth. It occurred to me on the second viewing that, you know, how the Bodhi's character is sort of spacey. He can't really remember things very well. He's sort of in his own world. Initially, my take was that's just sort of who the character was, but it occurred to me that was he that way because he got exposed and was, you know, this poor gullet attached it to himself. And actually, Saw's character actually says sometimes you lose the trade-off with getting the truth out of you is that you lose your mind. So I'm wondering if you guys caught that.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I think that Saw knows about that because he's got experience with it. You know, that's exactly the same feeling that I got from it. So, yeah, it was very interesting. I thought.
Yeah, and that character was so well animated. That poor gullet. I don't know. Is it boar gullet? Poor gullet? Something like that. But, yeah. Really, really cool stuff. So moving on, let's talk a little bit about the Rebels references. We mentioned Saw Gerrera as the most glaringly obvious one, with a full-on character from Rebels appearing in Rogue One. Scott, I know you had some thoughts on this. What were the Rebels references that jumped out to you?
It's funny because I wanted to find out as much as I could about this movie, and I know you guys technically watched the Rebel show. I haven't actually caught it all. I've seen clips here and there, and I've watched some of the more important stuff that's happened, but I did pull down quite a bit of information of references to Rebels. One of them is obviously, we mentioned Saw Gerrera, but the other one is the ship, the Ghost. Does make an appearance multiple times in the film. At first, I thought it was just one scene during the battle sequence. You do see the Ghost flying by one of the, I believe it's a medical frigate, and one of the Mon Calamari ships are flying by. You see the Ghost fly on the bottom lower quadrant of the screen heading towards the shield. However, the Ghost does make an appearance on Tantive IV. If you do watch one of the overhead, almost like a drone shot, it's an overhead crane shot, you will see the Ghost parked on the outside of the temple on Yavin 4. Oh. You will see it in the upper left quadrant of the screen if you do see the film again. That takes us to a couple moments on Tantive 4. I just want to point out, if you're familiar with the characters, you will see definitely Chopper kind of tools by on one of the sequences as they're all kind of coming out of the temple having a conversation taking place. You can't miss it. The droid goes completely from the right side of the screen all the way across to the left-hand side. It's the green-orange droid that has, looks like an R5-D4, R5 unit or whatever, kind of pieced together. You guys know a little bit about him, right?
He's sort of squat compared to a typical astromech droid, right?
Right.
And he's got little arms that kind of hang out the side, too. Oh.
Right. You can't
miss his head.
And the color is definitely there. I've seen the screenshots a few times now. It's pretty amazing. In fact, I might put a few of them up on the Facebook page if it's okay to put some spoilers up. Now, the other reference is, let me pull up my notes. Sorry, I just had them up here and they went away. There is a character on the show named Hera Syndulla. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Am I saying that correct?
You're 100% correct.
There is an overhead reference to someone who's being called General Syndulla on the show. Now, this is wonderful, and I did want to talk about this because I know you guys are fans of the show. Hera Syndulla is not a general on the show Rebels.
It is her father is, though.
Right. Her father, Cham Syndulla, is the general. Mm-hmm. However, it has now been confirmed by Dave Filoni and someone else, another, I guess, producer or director on the show, that they are referencing, in fact, Hera and not her father, thus actually giving us a spoiler to the Rebel show that something is going to happen with Hera Syndulla's character on the show being promoted to general. So
that's interesting because the timeline of Rebels is kind of nebulous in between episodes 3 and now Rogue One. It was always between episodes 3 and 4, but obviously takes place before Rogue One, so between 3 and Rogue One. But it was always just kind of in that gray area, somewhere in that 20-year time gap, you know? So yes. Now it puts us definitely several years ahead of Rogue One because that's a younger character, and I don't think she may be a captain at the point of the show. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, and I really can't. But she's, you know, she's not a high ranking official in the Alliance or the Rebellion, whatever you want to call them.
I don't know that she has a military designation on the show. I can't remember them calling her captain.
Yeah, it's her father's the one who's involved in the military, so. Huh.
He is the general that they're referencing. However, Dave Filoni has gone on record to actually say that. Huh. And there's a great side note for all of you fans out there of the Rebel show is that Dave has mentioned now that there is a good opportunity for them to retell the Rogue One story from the point of view of the Ghost crew. So that was one of the biggest news points, I thought, out of all of the references, is that we might actually get to see that battle sequence take place from the Ghost ship. And I think that is going to be one of the coolest and most fascinating elements of what this movie is doing, tying into not just A New Hope, not just the prequels, but the cartoon series. And I think what a great way of just tying everything together and making it just one fluid story. I think that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, see, that's interesting because the Rebels story takes place definitely closer to the Rogue One side of history than the Episode 3 side of history, and I base that by saying that Captain Rex returns in Rebels from the Clone Wars cartoons. Captain Rex returns in Rebels as an older, grizzled veteran, a trooper who did not conform to Order 66 and kind of has been on the run since then.
Wow, I did not know that. That's actually kind of interesting.
Yeah. So it puts it definitely on that side of the calendar, you know, closer to the more recent, closer to the Battle of Yavin than Episode 3 and the Clone Wars. So it'll be interesting to see where the crew is in terms of what they're doing during the stealing of the plans and all that. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I guess you might be able to see Cassian come back or something. I don't know. Interesting. Or maybe it's just the forming of the Alliance and that that helps us creep towards Rogue One.
Well, based off of the information that I just presented here, and this is stuff that I've looked up online, but this is also information that has been provided officially through Dave Filoni. I can't remember if it was a tweet or actually on one of the official interviews or blogs or whatever, StarWarsNews.net or something. But it is out there, and I'll find the official links and put them up on the site as well. But what I find really fascinating is you're not just going to get a retelling of just that scene, but now that we've seen that the Ghost ship is on Yavin 4, the Ghost ship is actually, and the crew is flying alongside the blockade runner and the Calamari warships and everything. What a great way of telling, not just one moment, like, hey, let's just pop them in and just quick show this on the show that they're in the battle and then they take off. They're all over the place. There's more story to tell there. They could be out there planning something else down there on Yavin 4 with the rest of the Rebels. I mean, you see Chopper moving around, so that means the rest of the crew's got to be on the ground somewhere, most likely interacting with some of those higher ups or maybe some of the other officers. I think that's a really cool way of just keeping things alive and fluid in the whole universe, and not just isolated to one film connecting to another film.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that just kind of pops into my head just now is that in Rogue One, when Bail Organa makes his appearance, there's a conversation between he and Mon Mothma where they talk about the need for Bail Organa to go out and contact his Jedi friend as though they're not, you know, they're very few and far between now.
Yes.
But on the Rebels crew, they have and I forget his main the names of the two characters right now. I watched the show and I can't remember both of their names specifically. But one's a Jedi and one's a Jedi in training.
You're talking about Kanan is the,
yes,
the Jedi.
Thank you.
And what's the kid's name?
Bratty McStinkface.
Right. Bratty McStinkface.
but are they in communication with Bail Organa in the show?
I don't know. I don't remember off the top of my head if there's been an Organa appearance yet. I don't remember that.
Because I took that moment. There's two moments with Organa that he talks about basically Princess Leia. Kind of gives us a heads up that we're going to see Leia later on in the film.
Leia's in the show. Leia's in Rebels.
Okay. And then the moment where he talks about his old Jedi friend, I'm assuming he's talking about Obi-Wan.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, oh, yeah, the reference is there that, well, who do you trust to send that message along? And he says, somebody I would trust with my life or something to that effect, you know?
Okay.
But doesn't he say, I would trust her with my life?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
He does.
Which that becomes, because there's two things he says, doesn't he, in the film. Somebody makes a reference to talking to his old Jedi friend, but then he also talks about somebody he would trust with his life, and that's her. And in that sense, I'm assuming he's talking about Leia.
He is absolutely talking about Leia.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he is definitely 100% without a doubt talking about Leia.
It's two separate things. That's what I'm trying to drive home.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when he says, I've got to go back to Alderaan, did you want to just go, no?
Oh, God.
The Vader-esque, no! Where was Scott when we needed him?
That was painful to watch, just knowing what was going to happen.
Yeah. Great character. And so, Scott, what other Rebels connections were you able to draw?
Was that it? Let me double check my notes on that.
The chopper reference is great. I saw someone posted the still screen capture on one of the threads we frequent here on the Wretched Hive. There's a podcast alliance on Facebook. And lots of folks putting cool images up there, and there's a great image of Chopper just in the middle of the screen right there, and it's unmistakably Chopper. So,
well, really, I think that's stuff. All I had, unless I'm missing something on here. But if you did see something else, I did want to point out one thing about the Saw Gerrera character. Mm-hmm. There is a moment, I think it's in his lair, and I love when they put these little callbacks. Not the glaring ones, but I love that one of his kind of nasty crew guys, whatever, they're sitting there playing basically an analog version of the Jarek chess game.
Yeah.
I love that moment.
Non-hologram version of it, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm almost, I'll double check this, and I will put this up also on the site, if that was the models they used for the scanning and whatnot for the original film.
Well, they recreated all those models for Force Awakens, didn't they?
They did. I think you're right.
I think you're right, too.
I think they hired
If they're not the originals, they're the ones that they used in Force Awakens. Just
okay, there is a catch to that, though. Yes, it was all of the originals that they recreated. However, J.J. Abrams put one of his monsters in there. So I believe that...
And then Gareth Edwards stole it.
And Gareth Edwards stole it.
Was it the smoke monster?
No. It was the Cloverfield. I believe the Cloverfield monster.
Okay. I can just see Gareth Edwards dressed in like a Hamburglar costume running around Lucasfilm shoving things in his pockets.
He totally seems like that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He did steal the Death Star plans, as he was reported wildly.
Right?
And footage, original footage we've never seen. I would be the guy, too. I'd be like, what's in those cans over there? Oh, thanks. I'll take those.
What's in the box?
Her pretty head. Well, thanks for that, Scott. That was a lot of great connections. And we're really not treading new territory with the connections between the film and the TV shows. But I think that Star Wars has the opportunity here to really do it better than it's ever been done. And we've talked a little bit about the Marvel Universe with the Avengers. And is it Greg's favorite show? Who loves that
show? Yes. Greg loves Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and cannot get enough of it. Right? And wishes it was a 40-episode season order.
Agents of Suck My Balls.
So perhaps Star Wars can take Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to the next level, you know? I really think there's an opportunity with all the story there is to tell in the Star Wars universe to do just that, especially when you're dealing with animation where they can basically do whatever they want.
And just to jump in and build on that, I mean, I've seen an article or an interview where one of the higher-ups at Lucasfilm, and it might have been Ms. Kennedy herself, was saying that, hey, we're not sure exactly what we have and how the product's going to be received. So after Rogue One comes out, we're having a story meeting basically in the first quarter of 2017 to look at what are we going to do next with these standalones. And are we going to try to start weaving things together more in a Marvel universe, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe type of way? And you can see, and I know I talked about that in the last podcast, where they really have the seeds of it playing around, but it's also not so much that if they decide, you know what, this doesn't work for us, that they can't just back the hell away and it's just some cute stuff that's in there in Rogue One and Rogue One only.
Right. I found it funny, somebody brought up the box office and how recently, I think it might have been Nico, and I'm not crapping on his name because he's not here, but he mentioned that it was a pretty decent drop from the next weekend, which is, you know, fair to say for this type of movie around this time of year. But it was funny to see the Christmas increase from Saturday to Sunday and from Sunday to Monday was so huge of an increase. I mean, Monday's box office total the day after Christmas, which a lot of people had off, jumped all the way back up to like $31 million in one day. Mm-hmm. So, and touching on the reason I'm bringing this back to you, Dave, is this whole thing with kind of reevaluating and kind of saying, hey, we're going to hold off and not announce a third movie yet until we kind of see how this plays out. Come on. I mean, after all the talk that we've had about it, I know you can sit back and say it's not going to do Force Awakens numbers, but we're sitting right now from at least the last Monday box office report. Domestically, this movie's sitting at $318 million. That's, what, in less than 10 days?
Yeah.
That's so insane.
Let me build on that a little bit, because I just called up the most recent numbers, which include yesterday, Tuesday the 27th. Okay. Rogue One's sitting at $340 million domestic, which makes it the number 7 grossing movie for the year. It is immediately right behind Zootopia at number 6 by like $1 million. So with the Wednesday total, if we assume that's in the $20 to $22 million range, it's going to jump up past Zootopia and Deadpool and be a top 5 movie for the year before the year closes out. The trick is, will it garner enough on Wednesday and Thursday? And I think Thursday the 29th is considered the last box office day of 2016. Okay. Will it garner enough in these remaining 2 days to jump up past The Secret Life of Pets at $368 million?
And who the hell went to go see The Secret Life of Pets?
Apparently a lot of flipping people, because it's the number 3 grossing movie of the year.
That's shocking.
And The Secret Life of Pets, that was a great trailer. I laughed out loud at that trailer, I have to admit.
Oh, no. Right.
That we'll have to have an offline conversation about that, will. Steve. But
You can save that for your Secret Life of Pets cast that you're recording by yourself after this one.
But the other kind of broader point I wanted to make on that, just to build on what you're saying, Scott, is I look at the films that are kind of in this top 10 list of the year, and I'm comfortable saying the top 10 list is locked. It's just a question of what the order is going to be, because some of the films are still in theaters.
Yeah.
But I look at say a Batman versus Superman: Dawn of Justice, which got $330 million domestically, is the number 8 grossing movie of the year now. Huge financial box office success, but I don't think anybody would say we want to see more of that. It was such a horrifically received movie critically, and I think from a lot of fans. I think there was a lot of hate watching that went on for that movie.
Yeah.
And that's not the case with Rogue One.
Right.
It's not only excelling at box office, it's getting good reviews and it's getting a really good solid fan response. And it's clear that people want to see more things like this and more things in this vein.
Right. And to even further that point, most of these things, because I follow these box office reports, Box Office Mojo and a few others as well. Box Office Guru is another great site to, to reference. It's interesting to see how these things are received, because it's not just the fact that they come out and they make millions and millions of dollars. We know those movies are going to do it. Even Batman versus Superman, as critically lambasted as that film was.
Oh, it was an awful movie. It's not just critically lambasted. Well, that thing is a piece of crap. I'm sorry.
I agree.
But it was also an instant money maker. I mean, you knew it was going to be a business.
Absolutely, but it was turgid. It was pretty bad.
Based off of a lot of these types of reports, these online sites that monitor this stuff, yeah, it's going to make a ton of money, and it did. DC and Warner's happy, but when you look at compared to something like Rogue One, you're going in, there's a high expectation, just like Batman versus Superman, but when the reviews start coming in, you're already getting these acclaimed reviews, and that's a good sign right away. And then the first like preview showings start coming up, and you're getting actual people tweeting out their reviews like, oh my God, this is one of the most insane Star Wars movies ever. That is not what happened with Batman versus Superman. It was just slammed critically. It was slammed by the fans. Here you have a movie where Disney's saying, Kathleen Kennedy, who I love where they've taken the direction of this franchise, are sitting there going, well, we're going to kind of hold off and wait. I respect that, but when you have something as solid as this, and you're getting these instant reviews a week before the actual official release, and then within 7 days, and then finally the official release, you're getting some of the best reviews out there. It's making top 10 lists, year-end lists, and it's making tons of money. This is a point where you're like, oh yeah, we're definitely continuing this. We've got the Han Solo thing in the pipe. Now in the next one, we're looking at Boba Fett, maybe Obi-Wan. Start making a couple of those quick announcements just to get people more excited down the road.
I mean, I guess the talk has been building up again. The scuttlebutt that I've read, anyway, is there's steam building behind Boba Fett being rising from the ashes like a phoenix, and Obi-Wan that's still hanging out there, but he may have something to do with the upcoming either 8 or 9. So they're holding off on announcing that until they decide what they want to do with him in 8 and 9.
Yeah,
and frankly, I think all of that is now going to get the additional juggling factor of they don't have Carrie Fisher for episode 9.
Yeah.
And there are plot holes that are going to need to be filled in somehow.
Well,
I don't know what, because obviously I haven't even seen 8 yet, but if she's alive at the end, if Princess Leia is supposed to be alive at the end of episode 8, there's plot holes that need to be filled in episode 9.
You're right, and that is going to be a tough thing to do, but from what we've seen with Rogue One and what we know with all the reshoots, and there were a shit ton of reshoots, we now know this wasn't just a cover-up thing where we now have known that the cast and a few people have said, oh, it's just common, we do this all the time. No, they reshot a lot of this film. They pulled it off. They did it in a way that didn't scare too many people. There was a little bit of fear out there, but they kind of squashed that down a little bit. Even though later on it did come out, wow, they pretty much reshot the ending of this film. And it came out damn good. Like, it is a good film. I don't think it's the best film of the year, but I think what they pulled off is one of the best Star Wars films in a long time. Force Awakens was great. I know we've had a little discussion over that. But this movie is a solid film and brings back a lot of nostalgia for people, because you're using, you know, characters that we've seen before. The digital recreations are pretty much spot on. I know we've had a little bit of discussion about that. And you're talking original ships and a plot line that builds into A New Hope, which is one of the, you know, arguably some people consider the best Star Wars film. I know a lot of us don't here at The Hive, but, you know, it's still one of the great ones out there. And it's fascinating to see Disney kind of playing this. I think Disney has a great sense of understanding. I just want to see them kind of push it now. Like you mentioned, this all stemmed off of the fact that you were talking about possibly an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. type TV show, that kind of thing. I would actually totally be on board with that. Right, as of right now, I'm convinced. They've totally took us to a third trilogy that's amazing so far. They gave us a standalone film that is unbelievably cool. Seriously, I walked out of there, I'm like, Empire was a dark film. Rogue One, they killed everybody in this damn movie. You walk away with Vader and a shit ton of rebels that are dead in a dark hallway, and Tarkin's still alive, and we know where it's going, but wow, how can you they just pulled that off like brilliantly. Ah, I'm on a tangent.
Yeah, guys. No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, Scott. I think that this franchise is in really good hands, and I think if anyone can course correct, it's Disney, and they have brilliant minds working on this movie. They've got Star Wars fans making Star Wars movies.
Yes,
and it's an exciting time to be a Star Wars fan, no doubt.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because they're really going to the right minds. I mean, the whole idea behind Rogue One, well, the driving idea behind Rogue One came from, like, John Knoll, who's like he's not a high up at Lucasfilm. He's been there forever, but he's like a special effects guy or something like that, isn't he?
Yeah, and he's the guy who actually came up with the idea and created Photoshop.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's where he got his start, and wow. it's an amazing, if you follow his career, I've got so many interviews with that guy from old Lucas, like CD-ROMs. I mean, back in the early 90s, CD-ROM things, where he talks about that and how he's being pulled into Lucasfilm and everything. It's some good stuff. I'll dig that archive footage up and post it, too.
That's pretty good for the old resume. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Compare and contrast, like what? So, like Lucasfilm killing it, Marvel Studios killing it. Compare that with like DC and how it's just they have all these great ideas and everyone is just strikeout after strikeout. I mean, Batman versus Superman just failed miserably. Suicide Squad failed miserably.
And yet they're both on the top 10 grossing movie list for the year.
They're both really bad movies.
But what I would say to that is there's no joy in the movies. I mean, Superman Dawn of Justice, Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice, it just inherently sounds like this hopeful, you know, glorious sunrise thing. And it's just so dark and bleak and depressing. When I finally watched it, I was like, I would never buy this. I am so thankful I did not pay to watch this. I just rent, you know, downloaded it pay-per-view for like $5 or something like that.
Man.
They need to get the hope and the joy and the lightheartedness back, which is something the Marvel Cinematic Universe has captured extraordinarily well. That just kind of tone and tenor and flavor from the original Marvel 60s, where it was just lighthearted, us against the world, banter stuff. And Star Wars, even though I would argue it's a little heavy-handed perhaps in Rogue One, the idea that there's a message of hope in all of this against, you know, the dark overarching force of the universe. It's inherent positivity, and people respond to that, and they want it, and they seek it out, and they will go and see it again and again, which is what will push Rogue One over those movies all the time, and why Batman, Superman, and Suicide Squad, they drop off, because people go see it once, say it's crap, and they don't go back to it.
Yeah.
Off my soapbox.
Well, you're totally right. And when we can go all the way back to A New Hope, Star Wars, when it came out in 77, it changed the landscape of science fiction movies and a lot of movies in general, because science fiction was so bleak and so dark. You know, everything after like Planet of the Apes in 2001 in the late 60s, everybody said, oh, well, we got to make everything, you know, everything's going to be bleak, everything's going to be desolate. And Star Wars all of a sudden changed all of that. And I don't know where along the lines, maybe because Empire was the quote-unquote darker movie, everybody said Star Wars has to be dark, Star Wars has to be dark. Well, Rogue One is what you get when Star Wars goes dark. And that's I think that's why I didn't enjoy it as much as Force Awakens, just because I don't go to Star Wars for bleak. I don't go to Star Wars for that darkness. I mean, Empire is my favorite of all the movies, but it's still a fun movie.
Yeah, I still think there was some fun in this movie, but knowing full well that they took the direction to go dark because they had the opportunity to do it. I mean, you could live in a universe, which we all have enjoyed. I still had some fun in it. I loved K2SO. I know we're going to talk about him pretty soon. I like some of the banter in between some of the characters. It is a darker film. It is a war film. It's still a Star Wars film. There's plenty of that to like slap us in the face a couple times. But, you know, I like the idea that we could get that Empire feel out of this. There's nothing wrong with having a dark film, knowing full well that you're going to end up, and again, the way that they kind of directed it to that last moment, right, it's like handing off the Death Star plans right out the ship onto the Tantive IV to take off, and it picks up right on A New Hope. You've mm-hmm. already, and the fact that they used the concept of we're a rebellion, people are going to die. I know we discussed this in the last episode. I actually felt sympathetic for some of the stormtroopers. There are stormtroopers getting the living shit kicked out of them and shot to pieces. I mean, seriously, the Chirrut Imwe scene where he is beating everyone, we've seen a million times in the trailer, all the trailers, you just see him kicking these guys' asses with a stick in the face and in the gut, you know. Then they just mow them all down. There's a moment where I'm like, damn, that is harsh. This is war. This is, and people are getting, the kid that runs out in the street and Jyn Erso saves her right before, again, another moment of like, she's doing the right thing, but you're in battle and they're not thinking about possibly killing kids or women around them and collateral damage. It's a dark film. But it leads to a point of hope, and I love that. I love where it went with that film.
And to Greg's point real quick, and then maybe we can throw it back to Steve to talk about K2SO, because if we don't do that, we're all going to be kicking ourselves tomorrow. But Empire is considered the darkest film, absolutely, but it's also considered the best by many people. And there was a quote from Kirshner, and I think it's on the commentary track for the latest release, where he talks about how he wanted more humanity from all of the characters, even the droids, make them more human and more relatable. And I, ever since I've heard that, I've felt like that's what makes it still work and be everybody's favorite, even though it's so dark, because everybody is just more relatable in that movie. Yeah. And I think that's what they went for with the reshoots on Rogue One, is they realized, and I think you said that at our last podcast, they had everybody dying and they had a story constructed where nobody gave a crap about any of the characters when they died. So they went back to follow the Kirshner directive and make them more human and more relatable so that we actually did care about them. And that's what keeps it from being a completely bleak movie for me, but absolutely a dark movie. You've and I'll this, shut up if that's not what you meant. I apologize.
Well, no, it's perfect. You've done
got,
it.
You've
Thank
got this
you.
Dark movie, and then it's you've got R2-D2 stepping up on his tippy toes to look in the window to see, you know, what Luke is doing and with Yoda. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a fantastic way that they blend the depth and the darkness in with these lighthearted moments. And I'll just end with, I really like what you said in the beginning when you mentioned inherent positivity. That's what Star Wars is. Rebellions are built on hope. Gareth Edwards delivered a war movie, and yet there's still this sense of hope and joy in the movie. That's what's great about Star Wars. You can show guys getting their, you know, hands and limbs lopped off. You can have the, you know, I am your father moment that touches so many of us in a really, really deep way. But at the end of the day, you have this inherent positivity of these movies, and that's what brings fans back, and that's what keeps us coming back.
Damn, Steve, I want to keep talking, but I know we got to get to the next one. But you mentioned the R2-D2 on his tiptoes, yeah, and that made me think of another moment in this film, which is absolutely a positive, light moment that makes me feel great about K2SO. And that is that great moment where Jyn shoots the Imperial droid, the security yes. droid, and he walks out and he says, "You did know that was not me, right?" Like, that moment is, it's sincere, and it's like, hey, I'm a snarky kind of punk-ass droid, but I'm with you guys. And you didn't even think twice. I love that moment. Yeah. It's the humanity in that moment is brilliant. And I know we're going to talk a lot about Alan Tudyk later on, but oh, man, that droid in that moment, wow, that was great.
Well, let's just jump into it right now. Alan Tudyk just did a great job voicing K2SO, arguably the most likable character in the movie. He's just got so many great one-liners. You mentioned you did know that was me, right? He's sort of got this wit. I think Diego Luna's character in the beginning that says, you know, it's a fault of his reprogramming that he says whatever comes into his circuits. It's sort of unfiltered, and I just love that about this character. In many ways, sort of you could say is the sort of the comedic element of the movie, but also in some ways, Greg, he's sort of the soul of the movie. You know, they go back to him. He's the loyal R2 part of the movie. He's also sort of the 3PO wise, telling you the odds part of the movie. What did you think about this character overall? And I'd just love to hear what, you know, your opinion on K2SO.
Well, I think that Tudyk knocked it out of the park. Yeah, he couldn't have done a better job. He probably is the most memorable character for a lot of people out there. He's you know, the fault of his programming was he says everything that comes into his circuits. So he doesn't have that filter and he lets it go. He says that there are people that are not trustworthy, and that moment at the end when he compliments Jin, you know that's sincere because he said everything under the sun up until that point about how he didn't like her. And so much feeling and caring out of that character who's supposed to be cold and robotic.
Right. And then he has a hero's death at the end, essentially sealing them in the vault scene where they're looking for the Death Star plans, and, you know, gives his own life, you know, to save his friends. And that's mm-hmm. very Star Wars as well, you know, the self-sacrifice element of that I thought was great. What did you guys think of the animation? I mean, I don't know how much of the character was animated versus a more traditional robot or model, rather. I thought it was really, really good. There was a couple of times where I swear I thought I was watching stop motion. There's one particular scene where they're unloading a ship and he's walking up and it looked like stop motion animation to me. For the most part, I think it was digital. Do you guys have any intel on that? Was it mostly digital?
I think it was. There was at least some motion capture, and I'm efforting to see if I can confirm that right now live.
Yeah, as far as I knew that Alan was on set all the time to rehearse with them. I don't know. I'm pretty sure he was in the blue suit, the ping pong suit, or whatever they call it, for most of the filming.
Yes.
I don't know if they went with the puppetry of C-3PO from the prequels. Dave, do you know anything about that? Or
No, but I did just find a link to a featurette that shows Tudyk in a full body motion capture suit and walking around the set in stilts.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. I read about that he was on stilts.
Okay, so they did full motion capture then.
Wow.
Yeah, that's... His character is just amazing and such... Honestly, he's the heart and the kind of snarky sarcasm that comes along with that, but he's the human side of it, and I thought that was such a neat way of portraying. You, Steve, you mentioned the R2-D2 and C-3PO merged or meshed perfectly together in that robot, and I loved it. Honestly, out of all the characters that died, he's the one I think I got the most choked up about. He dies an unbelievable hero's death.
And he got to shoot a gun before he did it. I know he does not have emotions, but how frickin' happy was K2SO that he had a blaster and he got to shoot it and he got to nail some people with it?
It was a great moment. And it's the one time in the movie, and there's, again, the sympathy I felt for the stormtroopers when they were getting their butts kicked all over the place. At one moment where I'm actually saying, like, stormtroopers don't have this accurate of shooting. They can't kill this robot. That's not. I was dying. I was dying during this sequence. They killed the shit out of him.
Well, I think we talked about this last episode, where suddenly the stormtroopers in this movie can shoot.
Yeah.
Right.
Although remember, they're supposed to have a reputation for being good shots. I just watched A New Hope last night for obvious reasons, but there's the line when they find the destroyed sandcrawler, and Obi-Wan says, you know, only Imperial stormtroopers shoot with this accuracy and precision.
Right. I think that's where the actual joke of them not being able to shoot any of the heroes in that film kind of came from.
You know, there's a scene in the databank sequence when they're looking for they're trying to get the Death Star plans out of that database, of like cartridges, cassette tapes.
Yeah.
And there's a scene there when our heroes are looking up and the doors open, and it reminded me of the scene when Luke and Leia are on the Death Star and they swing across what is it called? They swing from one side to the other.
The chasm,
yeah. And the doors open. It looked almost like the identical angle that they achieved, in the similar chasm that was on the databank sequence. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
I'm almost certain that they do a lot of those types of throwbacks or callbacks just to make you feel that familiarity of the films. I want to throw something else also about the stormtroopers' accuracy. We make fun of it all the time. I know we do, but I will say that they, in Return of the Jedi, it is a stormtrooper, I believe, that shoots Leia in the shoulder, a nice, pretty much direct hit from the bushes on Endor while they're trying to get into the secret base. So I just want to throw that out there. They are bad shots, but man, that guy had a pretty good shot right there.
Well, that's a broken clock being right twice a day, in my opinion.
There you go.
Nice.
No doubt. Guys, just a couple of other observations we made in the show notes here. The first time you see a Star Destroyer on screen, it's out in front of the Death Star, and the shadow kind of creeps up over the Star Destroyer. That's just a great, great shot. Money shot, as Scott would say.
Oh, yeah.
that thing looked like a model to me. I don't think that was digital. That looked like a model.
I'm doing some research on this. I have a friend at work that had brought up a couple cool points, and I want to do some some actual investigation on this. He said that a lot of people on the production of this film had access to the original models of the film, and they did these full 3D scans and were able to recreate everything in pretty much perfect accuracy as what we saw in A New Hope. And that's why we see them, a lot of them, gleaming and white and clean. I'm going to do a little extra research on this and find out for sure. And I'll post some update on that as soon as I can find that information out. But I think that's why we see the way they look. And I got a couple other money shots later on. Dave, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but speaking of money shots and speaking of Star Destroyers and money shots, just a quick poll. The pool shot at the end, the Hammerhead Corvette into the Star Destroyer, into the other Star Destroyer, into the shields. Yep. Was that CGI or was that practical? Was that models? I think it was models.
It looked like models, man. It was so damn crisp and clear, and I love the way that looked. And you totally pulled my money shot from me, but that's all right. That's
what you said
at the Porn Hive. So that sequence was amazing. I just loved watching that. I love the scene when, I know physics be damned on this, the Super Star Destroyer crashes into the surface of the Death Star in Return of the Jedi. It totally reminded me of that moment. It reminded me when you see the front end of one of them swipe across the top, or the moment in Empire when the two of them kind of collide together. I love that. I love it when they just can't get it right. The Rebels outdo them, outsmart them, outfly them, and that moment was so brilliant. Use the Star Destroyers to take down the shield. What a great, great little moment right there.
Yeah, that was a really cool moment. You know, it's interesting how with modern filmmaking and these Star Wars movies, you cannot tell which is digital and which is practical. Like, there's a scene in The Force Awakens when Han and the others are walking into the bar scene, and there's this android thing walks out away, like, towards the camera past them.
The red droid.
Yeah. That, I understand, it was a practical effect.
Yeah.
Which it does not look like it should be. It's just this gangly sort of awkward skinny leg droid that somehow they made it, you know, practical. And then when the camera pans up and you see the flags and there's a Mandalorian flag up there, those flags are digital.
No, the flags are digital, but the droid was real. That's amazing.
It's really cool. And so I think that carries over into this movie for me. I'm looking at these things going, is that digital? Is that real? And if you can't tell, I think they're hitting a home run with these effects.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, a couple of other observations. I know we wanted to talk a little bit about, and then we can definitely touch on the end of some other things I think you've got maybe there, Scott. But we wanted to talk about the father-daughter connection in this movie. You know, the father-son, father-child connection that runs throughout all the Star Wars movies. Very present in this movie with Jyn and Galen Erso. And I just thought it was really cool how, you know, Jyn changes over the course of the film. She's trying to sort of get away from her past, at the same time embrace it. She says, you know, seeing the Imperial flags reign over the galaxy isn't a problem if you don't look up. And by the end of the movie, she figures out that her father is captive and she's trying to save him. I think there's a lot of depth here to the father-child relationship. And I'm just curious as to what you guys think of it, if you had any take on the Jyn Galen Erso relationship in this film.
Having read Catalyst beforehand, I don't know if I'm able to separate, you know, my exposure to Catalyst and the early stages of the father-daughter relationship from what we had at the, you know, presented to us in Rogue One as the father-daughter relationship. But I think you've hit the nail on the head in the overarching theme of family and those relationships and what those mean to people. And I know I'm stating the obvious, but that's real life. We look at our parents, we're greatly formed by our parents, and those kind of base family loyalties are what will drive us and get us involved in something that we perhaps wouldn't be otherwise. And I just love the idea, you know, your Death Star has a fuse and I just broadcast it to the galaxy.
Yeah, that was a great moment.
Yeah.
That's a great one. There's a great scene there at the end also as well, from a cinematography standpoint, when the camera pans in on the bridge that she's on, and the radar, the dish that she needs to readjust to broadcast the plans. It's maybe just a 5-second scene as the camera comes in on her, but boy, it's really great. Just, you get a sense for the scale of the shot.
And then the TIE fighter flies. Oh wait, sorry, wrong movie. My bad.
That was the
same. You can see the same one, right? That's been deleted out of all the trailers.
That was Rogue One Half, is what that was.
Oh. Okay.
Now, did we talk about last time? Where is the second Death Star during all of this? I don't think we touched on this.
We haven't. Can I, before we get into some deep stuff, I just want to throw a couple quick things out. We don't have to go into a full thing, but there are a couple cameos in there I want to throw out. Rian Johnson makes a cameo, who is the director of Episode 8, I believe. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep.
Episode 8, Chaos at the Jedi Temple.
Rian Johnson plays a character who...
Force you to give us more money.
Who plays a character we're all familiar with when the Death Star fires its super laser, super weapon. He is one of the laser techs standing on the side of the bridge, probably getting radiation poisoning from that.
So is he right next to NSYNC or was it the Backstreet Boys? I can never remember.
NSYNC, man. I think I have the action figures. Oh, that's sad. I guess, exchange for doing that cameo, Gareth Edwards will be in Episode 8 but he has not revealed what character he will be playing.
He's going to play Godzilla the Giant Lizard.
Now that would be a crossover.
So, Steve, talking about the Death Star 2, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, we talked a little bit about this offline, and I think one of you perhaps gave sent us an article in our little thread that we have going during the week. But the question arose, where is the second Death Star at this point?
Okay, I was not the person that did this, so whoever did, if it was Dave, I'm assuming it was Dave. No?
Great. It was a long week, so I might have done it and not remember it.
No, it was not me. Was not me.
Nico? Was this Nico? Oh, my God. Okay, I just want to throw this out. My personal opinion, and from stuff I've read and basing it off of that, is I think the argument or the understanding there is a problem here that the Death Star took a long time to build. We do see the initial construction in Episode 3 at the very end with a young Tarkin and Vader on the bridge of a Star Destroyer. Is that correct?
Yes.
Or a Republic cruiser, can we call it that at this point? Between A New Hope and Return of the Jedi, Steve, is this your argument that the time frame is such a short amount of time? Why don't we see a Death Star, which is twice the size? Death Star 2 was twice, right? Double the size of the original Death Star? Who's got the specs?
It was bigger. I don't believe it was twice as big, but that's always been something that's kind of irked me. Is why is the Death Star 2 significantly bigger than Death Star 1?
They had more people.
Just because we can? But I think the idea that we're getting at here is that with Death Star 1, the problem was that they were trying to invent a technology to power the super laser from scratch, from nothing, and that's kind of the focus of Catalyst, is how do they grind down and get to that. And with Death Star 2, it's like, oh, once we've built the MacGuffin the first time, all we have to do is now, you know, put up an assembly line and we can make MacGuffin 2, 3, 4, whatever.
Right. Yeah, that was the exact same sense that I got. It wasn't the construction of the space station itself. It was the weapon was the thing that was vexing everybody, and the development of this weapon. And that's, as come to be revealed in Rogue One, that is what Galen Erso was kind of stalling, was the construction of that weapon. Mm-hmm. So once they had that built, you know, it was fairly easy for them to recreate over again. Although Tarkin did blow up all the plans, so I don't know how that affects it.
And the other thing is there's probably a finite supply of kyber crystals out there.
Well, these are all great points. They're
not unless you go with the solar kyber crystals. If you go with the solar kyber crystals, they last forever.
One, I got to give a lot of props to the Empire and eventually the First Order, because I think even though we've made fun of the fact that they keep using these Death Star-type weapons, they did go organic in Force Awakens. I mean, they just said, you know, screw this full steel construction. Let's just use a planet and then suck the energy from the sun. Let's just do that.
Why are we actually building a planet when there's a universe full of planets we can just build on?
There's a planet right there.
See, it's like the vegan millennials took over and said, what a joke. Let's just use this planet. We got this. I wish Nico was here to back me up on that.
Now, Dave, are in Catalyst, do they talk about growing the crystals or using artificial crystals somehow?
If I recall correctly, there were some experiments, but there's something about the kyber crystal process that they do kind of grow organically, that it's not just a straight, you know, mineral deposit that crystallizes. There is something about that is what makes it so powerful and allows it to refract energy on the level that it refracts energy. And since they were pretty much guarded and protected by the Jedi as the sole source of power for making lightsabers, once the Jedi Order collapses, suddenly scientists get to work with kyber crystals. Like, that's a very big thing at one point. When Krennic presents Galen Erso with this boulder-sized kyber crystal, which is just many, many orders of magnitude beyond the size and scope of anything he's ever been able to look at or work with before. And now they have unlimited access because the Jedi aren't there. And the propaganda that the Empire actually spins out is, look, the Jedi were evil and they were keeping this wonderful tool and energy source from us for their own dastardly purposes. And now we, the benevolent Empire, can come forth and spread this among the people. And of course, all that happens is they strip mine it for their weapons in the Death Star. But I digress.
So I haven't read Catalyst yet, but
sorry, spoilers, spoilers.
No, it's okay. I'm curious about it, and I'm curious how much information they divulge, because I know that we've discussed this in the past, that the original Clone Wars animated series, the Genndy Tartakovsky series, has now been, as far as we've been able to find out research, is not canon anymore. There was an actual planet that the Kyber crystals were found on called Ilum. Since that is not canon, and now that we know that in Rogue One, it's Jeddah is one of the planets, is it only Jeddah, or
no,
are there multiple planets that you can find them? Is that in Catalyst?
There are multiple planets, but it's still a rare thing.
Okay. Okay, that was the thing, is even if they don't take away the Ilum concept, Ilum was kind of a Hoth-type world, it's frozen world. Mm. Yoda, Padme, your favorite Steve, C-3PO, and R2-D2 all go to the planet to retrieve some Kyber crystals and some lost Jedi over there in one of the episodes. I believe that was one of the episodes. But anyway, the concept of what I'm trying to drive at is that there are multiple planets or sources of this natural resource that they can pull from. And now that we've seen Jeddah as one of the planets, maybe there's other areas that they're able to find this resource on. The Kyber crystal.
Yes, there are, and that's talked about in Catalyst.
Okay. Oh, I have to read again.
It's honestly, it's a very good book.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. From a guy who has not gotten into a lot of the Expanded Universe books, I liked Catalyst quite a bit, actually. Yeah.
Okay.
I enjoyed it.
I will check it out.
Nice.
Audiobooks, man. Audible.com. Get your Audible.com fired up. Speaking of Audible, have we talked about Audible recently?
We did not. We did not talk about Audible. Let's do that. Let's totally pay homage to our... our sponsor for the show, Audible.com. That's a great transition, Greg, and whoever you are. And I do not have a clip picked out this week, but we can talk about how great Audible is anyway.
Dave and I are going to do a radio play right now, and then the Star Wars game.
We want to bring customers to
Dave,
Audible,
go.
not
you may
scare
fire
them away.
When ready.
You may fire when ready. For
like
you, the listeners of the Wretched Hive podcast.
You're not the first person to tell me that.
Audible is offering a free audiobook download.
Let me show you my lightsaber.
And a free 30-day trial.
Touch your tongue to mine.
To give you the opportunity to try out their service. There's over 250 Star Wars titles available. And you can download a free audiobook today just by going to audibletrial.com/hive. That's audibletrial.com/hive for your free audiobook download. And it doesn't sound anything like you just heard.
I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
You guys are killing me.
Oh, we have his assholes here.
Holy shit! They've gone plaid.
We passed it, sir. When? Just now.
Well, that brings us, mercifully perhaps, to the end of the movie. Great scene at the end. I loved the Krennic and Jyn Erso scene at the end. Classic filmmaking. Krennic's ambition has finally failed him. And Jyn, he asks Jyn, who are you? And she says, I'm the daughter of Galen Erso. And she throws it in his face. My father just put a fuse in the middle of your Death Star. And I sent a message to the universe on how to light it. Great, great final sequence there. Cassian comes back as the hero, shoots Krennic. And boy, it's a great ending to the movie. I thought at the end, my initial viewing was, is there a little romance, a little feeling going on between Jyn and Cassian at the very end of the film? Are they doomed lovers? Would they have been lovers given another plot? But I just think it's great that there's no romance in this movie. It's two colleagues working side by side, not always in agreement, in fact, arguing for a lot of the movie. But I just thought it was great way to end the film. And then, of course, at the very end, Cassian telling Jin, your father would have been proud of you. Closing that circle with the recurring theme for all Star Wars movies, fathers and their children. And I just loved the way the movie ended. Thought it was perfect. Then, of course, you get into the Vader sequence. So just a great, great – the last third of the movie, as we've talked about ad nauseum here, just a great third act of this film.
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it romance. There could be a spark there, but I think the fact is that they finally find mutual respect for each other, and I really love that moment. It's not doomed lovers. It's doomed like accomplishment. They're both there knowing that they've finally done what they needed to do, and here's that chance. Are they going to end up on another planet? Are they going to jump on a ship and get away? No, they're going to sit there and be annihilated by the Death Star. And I think that's a fascinating moment, wonderfully executed. And that little dialogue moment, there's another moment that's even more spectacular to me is, and I am a sucker for this. I love watching the fact that the guy that built the Death Star or was a major player in the Death Star is doomed to die by his own weapon. I think that was a great moment of him looking up and seeing his own weapon fire down upon him. And I think that was a brilliant act of poetry right there. I love that.
Talking about choking on your ambitions, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and from Tarkin's perspective, it solves a lot of problems that he has going on.
It does.
He takes out the rebels with the shot, and he takes out Krennic with the shot.
Yep.
And he kills an entire battalion of stormtroopers and a bunch of ships. But hey, they're the Empire, right?
You can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs, my friend.
Mm. This movie didn't make Vader, who we already knew was an evil bastard. This made Tarkin one of the most unbelievably cutthroat evil guys I've ever seen. Forget the CGI. This dude took the entire concept, which we all have probably experienced somewhere in our lives in corporate lifestyle, of somebody taking your idea or something that you're working on and a boss or a manager takes full credit for. He is basically taking the idea of the Death Star and saying, yeah, I'm going to run with that. Sorry, Krennic. There's that moment. And then he turns around and fires the damn weapon on him. Holy crap. What an asshole.
Hey, going back to Jin and Cassian.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like there were some definite hints that maybe they were going to come into sort of lover's embrace there. But I'm really glad they didn't. It sure seemed like it was going to go that route. And then it was just, no, it was, you know, the greater good that we've done here is all for the best, and we have nothing to be ashamed of. And that was the end of their story, and I thought it was a real fitting end for that. I was a little bit touched by that, and especially since they didn't just go for the cheap, oh, we're going to just mac out here during the end of the world. So,
Yeah.
There's a they would have needed to have a crappy Aerosmith song playing in the background if that had happened.
I don't want to close my eyes. You know what? There's another great little thing right there that I didn't realize. This whole movie uses hope a lot. It leads into A New Hope. And I love that there's a subtle moment.
Just now getting that?
No. I've only seen it once. I haven't. I'm working this out with you guys. But there is that moment of they don't actually know. They just know that they got the broadcast through. They don't know if this is going to work or not. They don't even know if it actually made the connection to the ship. As far as I can remember, there wasn't a moment saying, yeah, we got it. All right. Hey, go sit on the beach and be annihilated. They're just, again, that feeling of hope. Like, I think we did this. I think we're doing something really good. Another wonderful moment for the Star Wars universe was just they're toast. They're gone. And I think they think they did the right thing, and hopefully everything's going to work out. And it did. After an unbelievable, brutal slaughtering of 14, 15 Rebel Alliance members. But hey, whatever.
Well, and it's great to see it also in, of course, this whole movie was based on the crawl from episode 4, which essentially says the rebels have won their first victory over the Empire. And, you know, that one throwaway line in a crawl in a movie from, you know, 40 years ago becomes this epic adventure. It's pretty fun. Yeah. I mean, that really shows the depth of this universe and what they can do with these characters, given strong writing and as I said, Star Wars fans making Star Wars, we are in good hands, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you don't think you're going to end this thing without touching on a controversial subject matter, Mr. Baldwin, do you?
Throw it out there.
Yeah. There are two characters we haven't talked about making a cameo in this film. Did you want to talk about that?
Oh, sorry. We got to close. No, I'm just kidding. Fine.
I thought you were going to do it.
All right. So I'll just jump in. I'm assuming you're talking about 3PO and R2. And
let's talk about C3PO.
I think I referenced it on the last one where Steve said we're going to put that off as long as freaking possible.
No way.
We're about 3 hours into putting it off, so that's great.
Yes.
Again, also like prom night. But I thought that was the most gratuitous thing in the movie, and I could have 100% done without it. It honestly yanked me out of the moment of Rogue One. I would have just much rather not had R2 and 3PO in there. Just it felt very forced and out of place to me.
100% agree. There's no need for that scene. None. Did not drive the plot forward. It was complete fan servicing. And as I mentioned last time, except for this fan, I didn't need to see it. I didn't need to see them. I didn't need to see Luke in this movie either. I didn't need to go down to Tatooine and just see what Luke was doing.
That's what you think this was, though? You think this was just a gratuitous Luke moment that we didn't need?
Tell me what it was, if not that.
I agree that the scene was totally fan-served, and the only reason why it is not the worst scene in the movie for me is because the scene with fucking Ponda Baba and Dr. Avezon is in there, and that is the worst scene in the movie for me.
Is it really? So I didn't mind that. I did not find that at all.
It was so much. It was so much worse. It was so much worse for me. Because at least R2 and 3PO have a reason to be at the Rebel base.
Yeah.
And why is that, Greg? I'm going to ask you.
Because they're part of the Rebel Alliance.
They are, right? What ship do they end up on at the very end or the very beginning of A New Hope?
Tantive IV. Yeah, they're on that ship as it takes off from the battle. They're on it.
Would you say that it was in good reason that they should be at least at the Rebel base?
Yeah, but who cares about seeing him? What did they do to advance the story? Nothing.
Well, I'm going to get to that.
They gave some snarky comment that wasn't even funny.
Actually, it makes a lot of sense. It actually adds, again, another moment to A New Hope, and I want to drive this point home. What is the first thing you see when you hear C-3PO on the Tantive IV? When they're walking down the hall and they've been caught in the tractor beam.
There'll be no escape for the princess this time?
This is madness.
Right. They don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
But according to interviews and according to all the stuff that we've known over the years, Lucas has said that these movies have been basically seen through the eyes of C-3PO and R2-D2. The story has been told from their point of view. They have to be in the film. So at some point, we do have to see them interact with the rebels during this moment.
I have to disagree because I totally agree for 4, 5, and 6. Totally agree. Not the case at all for 1, 2, and 3.
But they're in all three of the prequels.
Yeah, but the stories aren't told through their eyes.
Technically, it could be said that it was told through their eyes.
Technically, you're full of shit.
Although, there is one theory that R2 is the one narrating the first six. First six, for sure.
I get that. I totally get that for 4, 5, and 6. But he is not even – neither one of them are around for significant portions of 1, 2, and 3. R2 – R2 is in more of it than 3PO's, but 3PO's window dressing in the prequels.
He's not. He's actually there. He is being built by Anakin, and he is actually alive. He's turned on and off by Anakin, but he is there, and you can read into that however you want. But
hello.
I will say that those droids are there through most of the prequel trilogy and do have some sort of database recollection of the first three movies. Now, if you look at this moment, if you look at what 3PO is saying and R2 are talking about at that moment, they are confused as to the events that are...
My dog is dying.
Rap.
Greg, you have a tauntaun in your...
He hates 3PO too.
was Obi-Wan cutting his limb off or something? What was that noise?
He is scratching his asshole is what he's doing.
Your tauntaun will freeze before it gets to the first marker, Scott.
So when you see 3PO on the Tantive IV, they're running around in a panic. They're the droids that are given the plans to end up on Tatooine. When you're talking about... when Luke is interrogating 3PO and asking him about the rebels, the Rebel Alliance, he's like, "Oh, I've seen many wars, many action, many." I think so. I don't know. He's confused. It's exactly what you're seeing at that moment. He's confused as to the events that's happening. He's portraying that moment, which he relays to Luke later on in A New Hope. I think it was a brilliant addition. I actually have reevaluated this and despise the Ponda Baba and Walrus, or whatever the hell their names are, Dr. Evazan. Their moment could have been done so much better. The 3PO and R2 moment was done, I think, brilliantly and ties in so much closer to A New Hope. There's other New Hope moments, too, that I want to point on. Krennic is a Grand Admiral. We know this by his uniform that he's wearing. It's a white uniform. There's one white uniform sitting in the boardroom meeting on the Death Star with Tarkin and Vader when Vader chokes Admiral Mahdi, sideburns guy, or whatever. There is an empty chair next to Tarkin. There are only two Grand Admirals. There are nine in the entire fleet, if I remember, with the old expanded universe, which is no longer canon, but we do know that there is an empty seat on the Death Star, which now, if you look back, theoretically can be Krennic's seat, who has now been wasted by Tarkin, which makes him even more of an evil bastard. I mean, seriously, the 3PO connection, the Tarkin and the Krennic connection, there's so much. If it really is this, Gareth Edwards is a genius.
Well, I can see them doing that. I've heard that theory out there on the internets, and I thought it was interesting. I don't know if there's been any official confirmation of that, but it would fit, and I think I think it's a cool tie-in to the next part of the story, like you said. I want to take a step back at the top of the last show where we talked about it. You said that Rogue One fixes a couple of the plot holes from Jedi, and I didn't understand what you were talking about then.
Right.
The plot holes from Jedi are cleared up in Rogue One.
This is a wonderful thing, and this is from my point of view. It fixes the Death Star problem with the exhaust port from
yes.
New Hope.
Uh-huh.
When the Death Star 2 is being built, and theoretically is being built simultaneously to the completion of the first Death Star during A New Hope and Empire, and then by the time, whatever, was it 4 years that passes? 3-4 years?
Between
yeah.
A New Hope and Jedi?
Okay, yeah.
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 4 years.
So, in theory, the Death Star 2 is bigger and better and more powerful and is being built in the background, so we don't know what's happening. The Rebels don't know what's happening. They know that the first one's being built. There has already been a situation where they figured out that there's a problem with the exhaust port. They now have figured that out and are taking care of it. The problem is the Death Star is under construction. It's fully exposed. The only thing protecting it is the shield, which is generated from the moon of Endor. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If the Death Star was completed, it would have been impenetrable. You had to be on board to take care of it. Doesn't mean that the core isn't still unstable, much like the original. It's just now that at this point, 4 years down the road, they realize that there is a exhaust port issue and that has actually been fixed. Again, when you look at the Death Star 2, it's just not complete. Maybe three quarters of it, half of it is done. So they have access where all of the ships and the and whatever needs to build from the inside out, from the core out, is still is accessible. The only way you could get in, though, is with the shield down. So I think what you're seeing here is kind of fixing the problem of, hey, we built the Death Star. Ooh, Krennic, or not Krennic, I'm saying Krennic, Galen Erso built in the failsafe problem with the exhaust port. But mm-hmm. in the next 4 years, when that happens, they have figured out the problem. The problem now is it's not complete. And so now you have the Rebels have an access point. They just need to drop the shield and get in before the mm-hmm. Death Star is actually completed. And I think, is a fair assumption based off of the knowledge we now know from Rogue One. Again, maybe it's just an assumption, but I look at it that way. Maybe other people don't.
All right. Cool.
Fair enough, bro.
Cool theory, bro.
I'm going with the C-3PO, damn it. I swear. They're telling a damn story.
You and I are totally simpatico on the Ponda Baba Doctor of Azon 1, not so much on the C-3PO.
So, and I'll jump back to the 3PO R2 thing real quick. I don't think it advanced the story. I think they had enough threads connecting it to A New Hope that they didn't need it. And I have to disagree conceptually with the idea that R2 and 3PO have to appear in every Star Wars movie, because that really limits what you're going to be able to do with a Star Wars story concepts going forward. Because there's absolutely no reason for 3PO or R2 to appear in a young Han Solo movie, the Adventures of Young Han Solo.
Breaking news, guys. Anthony Daniels just passed away, and he won't be appearing in Star Wars. Oh, I'm sorry. Just kidding.
Damn it.
Bad joke.
I promise you Anthony Daniels is going to be the last one of the original cast to die.
Thanks a lot, Greg. We have him lined up for the next show. Guess who just canceled?
Wow, Steve is so pissed off. He's going to end the show on that note.
We're going to end there. No need for Anthony Daniels to have a line in this movie. None.
Calling in right now from England, everybody. Say hello to Anthony Daniels.
Hello, Steve. I hate you. You're an asshole.
It's got to be more of the Anakin. I hate you.
I hate you.
That was pretty good.
Anywho. Well, guys, episode 27 is in the books. This is a lot of fun.
2016 is in the books.
2016 is behind us. Thank goodness.
Happy 2017, everybody.
Yep. Happy 2017 to you, sir. And if you would like to celebrate New Year's with us, you can do so by looking us up on Facebook, facebook.com/wretchedhivepodcast. You can email us, wretchedhive@yahoo.com. You can tweet us at wretchedhivepod. And maybe the best way to find us is through iTunes. Go to your iTunes podcast section. Search for the Wretched Hive or the first one that comes up. Subscribe to the show. Leave us a review. 5 stars, 1 star, any stars. We don't care. We just want to hear from you, the fans of the Wretched Hive. And it's really been fun talking about Rogue One for the last couple of episodes. I'm glad we got to do this. Guys, we're going to have to do our Rogue One and now, The Force Awakens and now Rogue One commentaries. We got to get to that eventually.
I'm down.
Yep.
Hey, you know what? We missed a few things, and maybe next episode we can bring it up. There is a fan, Heather Chu, is that correct? Brought up some interesting points about the Bechdel test. I'd like to touch on that next podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Yeah. Keep that in your notes.
And Heather, forgive me, I don't know if I pronounced your last name correctly, but if not, please leave all hate mail to stevebaldwin@thewretchedhive.com.
That's fine. Leave us a voicemail. Tell us you hate us. That's fine. Oh, we gotta go. We're out. Have a great couple of weeks. We'll see you soon.
She is one with the Force, and the Force will always be with her.